about my lesson tonight, but I surely hope no one here will die of boredom. I don't see anyone named Eutychus in the audience, so I think we're good. We're going to talk tonight, continue in a series of lessons that I have been working on. We've been talking about why we believe in God. Ultimately, we will, over the next year, we'll be looking at the different steps of how we got from where, why do I even believe in God, to why am I sitting here in the Church of Christ today, or every lesson I'm talking about the different steps. We're in the first step, of course. We're reasoning through why we believe in God. How do we explain to those of the world why we even believe there is a God? And we go through the, you know, the laws of science, the evidences that we can see in our natural world, the fingerprints, the handprints of God, the purposes of God. We go through logical arguments. We see design and purpose. And so, last lesson we talked about the law of biogenesis. Previously, we talked about the laws of thermodynamics. We've talked about the laws of causality. And the law of biogenesis kind of led us into today's lesson, which is titled, in case Eddie's listening, today's lesson is titled The Laws of Probability and the Impossible Theory. And I always like to start off with a little scripture from Psalms that's kind of, I guess you could say, the mascot scripture of my lesson series. Psalms 14 tells us, "The Lord looks down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there are any who understand, who seek God." He's looking for men who want to know, who want to understand, who seek after why, who seek to understand God's design, to see God in the creation, and to know that we can believe in God because of the evidence that He has given us of His existence. So, why do I believe in God? Now, Acts 14:17 reminds us that God is not without witness, that it is not something that is hidden, that is hard to find, and we can just rest assured because we know in our hearts, or that we feel it, because there are many who are sincere, there are many who feel what they believe, who take great solace in that they believe what they believe with such strength. But when the truth is not known and all ideas are weighted equally and people are left to believe whichever suits them best, we need to, of course, seek after truth. Truth is always weighted heaviest of all because it's the only idea with any substance. Truth is the only thing with any real weight. So the creation declares the truth of God. And when we went through the laws of thermodynamics, we talked about how the universe had a beginning. It could not have been eternal because the law of entropy, we know that things wear out, things wear down, energy gets used up and it doesn't get replaced. We know the laws of thermodynamics also told us that the universe can't create itself. So it had to have a beginning, but the laws that govern this physical reality that we live in cannot explain how matter came from nothing. The universe cannot self-create. The laws of causality, or the law of cause and effect, told us that the universe has to have an adequate cause, that the universe had an adequate cause, that being a supernatural being, one which is not dependent upon a natural existence, not dependent upon a physical form that is all-powerful and all-knowing, not bound by concepts like space and time. And the law of biogenesis told us life can only come from life. Life cannot come from non-life. And God ultimately was the cause of life. And today we're going to talk about the law of probability. Last lesson, when we talked about the law of biogenesis, there are some ideas from that lesson that kind of segued into this when we were talking about how improbable some of the ideas that the evolutionist has, in that they believe that life came from non-life by certain building blocks of life, arranging in such a improbably perfect way, and then we're, I don't know, struck by lightning or something that they don't really know because they have never observed any mechanism for life coming from non-life. But the laws of probability kind of goes into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of a lot of scientific ideas. Now, science operates in terms of likelihood or probability, but they don't really get into saying something is definite or something is 100% going to happen. They look at what they can observe in the natural world and say what is most likely, what is probable, to the point in some instances of saying it has a very, very high probability, we treat it as true. That's where we get the laws of science, in that they were observed, and 100% of the time that they were observed, XYZ happened and not XYL or something else. So they've observed to be 100% true, or they happen the same way each and every time. And so they give themselves a little room to say, yeah, maybe sometime at some point something else might happen, but in all likelihood we can certify that this is a truth. So they operate in terms of likelihood or probability. And so the evolutionists contend that given enough time, even events with very low probability or very low likelihood will eventually occur. They say that time is the hero, and the evolutionists tell. Evolutionary inevitability. Just given enough time, even the most improbable thing will happen. Well, in 1962, an individual named Emile Borel, I guess you could say, clarified the idea of the laws of probability into what he called the single law of chance. And to state this simply, the single law of chance says events whose probability is extremely small never occur. Now, we think of what's extremely small chance. Now, this kind of took me back to my days in college taking calculus class. One of my calculus teachers was a pretty humorous guy. He liked to tell stories and talk about stuff. And he talked about the lottery and how when you add a certain amount of numbers, the odds of winning become significantly more difficult. And one that you see a lot is 1 in 64 million chance. So if you went and you typed in 1 divided by 64 million into your calculator, which I did just because I wanted to see what decimal it would come up with, it actually rounded up for me because there were so many decimal points. It was 0.000002, and that was rounded up from 15625 or something like that. So it was already like 8 decimal points out. And now in math, if any of you have ever taken any math courses, especially any advanced ones in college or whatever, you know anything past 1.001 is rounded off to zero. In math, we call that zero. And so his point of this was telling us, and it stuck with me because the way that he explained it was that lottery is like a tax for people who are bad at math. And so I always thought that was kind of humorous because, the decimal points go out pretty far. So it's an extremely small probability, and that's for 1 in 64 million chance. Right, 1 out of 64 million chance. Extremely small, you might say negligible, where something's so small, you pretty much consider it as not counting at all. You know, what humans would consider impossible. I mean, how many times, like every time the lottery came up and I went and bought a lottery ticket, I probably in my lifetime would not win the lottery because... And that's just 1 in 64 million chance. What they consider in the scientific realms in Emile Borel's day in 1962, when he coined the single law of chance, humans consider anything impossible something that is 1 divided by 10 to the 45th power. That is 1 divided by 1 with 45 zeros after it. Now, 1 in 64 million chance winning the lottery, that's only like 7 or 8 zeros. So we're talking about anything smaller than 1 divided by 1 with 45 zeros after it is negligible. It's something that humans consider impossible. It's never going to happen, no matter how much time you give it. And the evolutionists say, well, you take something small, say it's one in a million chance, and you just multiply it by time, eventually that gets bigger. And then it's a certainty at some point. And that's one of the reasons why they believe in deep time, why they have their evolutionary theory spanning millions and millions of years. And if you look at the history of the theory of evolution, you actually see they started off with millions and then hundreds of millions, and then as time went on, the theory gave it more and more and more time as we knew increasingly how complex life is. So how improbable, then, we've talked about 10 or 1 divided by 10 to the 45th power, how improbable have actual evolutionists calculated the theory to be? People in the field who believe evolution to be true, but also have to be scientific about it at the same time and be honest with themselves. Well, in 1970, which is quite a few years ago, right? Almost 50 years ago. 1970, one of the, or some leading evolutionists calculated it to be 1 divided by 10 to the 340 millionth power. So that's 1 with 340 million zeros after it. And that was in 1970. And only 3 years later, in 1973, an individual, an actual well-known evolutionist named Carl Sagan, estimated it to be about 10 to the 2 trillionth power. And this is not 1973, right? We have gone pretty far in the scientific field since then. We know life is far more complex nowadays than we even knew back then. So I can't even begin to imagine what they would estimate it to be. I think it's gotten to the point where they don't want to know and they just don't think about it because it's gotten so bad for them. But we talked about in 1962, they considered it negligible, that virtually impossible that it would ever happen at 1 over 10 to the 45th power. So 10 to the 45th power, and then they're talking about 10 to the 2 trillionth power. So 10 with 45 zeros after it versus 10 with 2 trillion zeros after it. So it's already negligible to a lot of us at 1 in 64 million chance. Scientifically considered impossible at 10 to the 45th, or 1 over 10 to the 45th, and we're talking 1 over 2 to the trillionth, 1 over 1 to the 2 trillionth power. It's too big of a number, or I guess you could say it's too small of a number for us to really even comprehend, to think about a number with that many zeros, because I can't see 2 trillion zeros in my head. I don't know what that even would begin to look like. And this is just for the right conditions to be met, what they assume the conditions to be, for certain building blocks to be perfectly arranged in a certain situation. And then that's where we take that step from the improbable to the impossible. Because some of the events required for evolution, or the theory of evolution to be true, have a possibility of literally zero. Because they don't know what? They don't know the mechanism for how life began. Well, how do you get from non-life to life? That's not anything that they can ever document. That's not something that they know. There's no mechanism that they can point to so that they can even determine any kind of chance or probability. Spontaneous existence from matter from nothing, talking about pre-Big Bang, they think there is this tiny ball of all the mass in the universe concentrated into this small ball of matter. And then you say, well, where did that come from? At some point, they would have to contend that it spontaneously came from nothing. But there's no scientific evidence, or there's no logical conclusion that would arrive at this disregard, this breaking of what we know as a law of science. Spontaneous generation of life from non-life. These have no possibility of happening. They violate established laws of science. There's zero evidence for, overwhelming evidence against. So we're getting out of the realms of the laws of possibility here, because we're going into the impossible. That, like, they can't even put a decimal point to something that they have not observed, that has no evidence, that has been observed to be untrue. By their own observances, their own words, the words of their own believers, evolutionists have proven the impossibility of their theory. The only place that they can find to hide is this idea of long time or deep time, the idea that it took millions of billions of years for all this stuff that's impossible to happen. I mean, the idea that the princess kissed the frog and the frog became a prince, we know that's a fairy tale. But suddenly you start saying, well, the princess kissed the frog and then 2 million years later he became a prince. Oh, now it's science. No, it's still just as fantastic, because the mechanism is just as impossible. This is just as much fantasy. How do you determine the probability of an impossible event? It's never been witnessed. It's never been observed. It's never been known to be true. Are these percentages, are these determinations just arbitrary? Who has seen matter be created? Can you approximate its likeliness that it would just pop out of thin air? Who has seen life come from non-life? They say it's true, all right, where has it been documented? Or how about life coming from life not of its own kind? All right, well, have you ever seen a life form give birth to life that was not its own kind? Well, no. Have you heard of someone documenting it? Is there evidence? Is it written in a record somewhere? Has any human alive ever seen a monkey turn into something that was not a monkey, or an ape turn into something that was not an ape during its lifetime, or give birth to something that was not of its own kind? It's never been witnessed. It's never been observed. There is no evidence, no documentation that it has ever happened. There's no record of a primordial soup. It all exists in man's imagination. So how do you even put a probability on something that has no evidence and has been proved to not be possible? The nonsense levels here become even more clear when you realize that these impossible events that we speak of, or as they might say, highly improbable events, have to happen many times, and many times consecutively. To think about that, it had something that was extremely unlikely that we deem negligible, impossible, had to happen not once, not multiple times whenever, but multiple times consecutively, many times over. As a simple mental exercise, it's, I suppose, a lot easier than what we're talking about here. Try rolling 6 on a dice 10 times. Like, if you go home tonight and you get your dice out, you only need 1, I suppose. Try rolling 6 10 times. Probably before an hour is done, you might get 6 10 times if you rolled it, and then you just kept track of every time you got a 6. Probably before the hour is out. Now try doing it 10 times consecutively. Try rolling a dice and getting the same number. It doesn't have to be 6. Try rolling the same number 10 times consecutively, and I probably won't see you here next Sunday because you'll still be home. I mean, think about that leap from having to have something happen multiple times to having it happen multiple times consecutively. And we're talking a 1 in 6 chance. I'm giving you a 1 in 6 chance, not 1 to the 2 trillionth power chance. And that's easy compared to the theory of evolution. We know from science, from secular science, the theory of evolution is impossible. We know from the Bible that it's nonsense. But using their own knowledge, their own words, we have shown it to be impossible, untenable. Life, according to it, is an impossibility. According to their own science, life is an impossibility. I mean, that's kind of funny when you think about it, because life is a reality. Life is an observable reality. If you can't observe it, then you're not alive in the first place. So the idea, life is a reality, and the idea that naturally concludes life is impossible has to be pure fantasy. Life is reality because, as Mark 10:27 tells us, in Jesus' words, all things are possible with God. The impossible happened. Why? Because an omnipotent, all-powerful God purposed for it to happen. Just consider the difference in probability of something happening by chance versus by purposeful, intelligent thought. Now go home and get your dice out and put it on six, and then put it on six 10 more times consecutively. It's a lot easier, isn't it? When you, instead of going by chance, when you purposefully do something, it takes intelligent purpose, and suddenly you go from millions and billions or whatever to 7 days of creation. Or really six, because you rested on the seventh day. So purposeful, intelligent thought cuts away all of that deep time, all of these numbers that they try to impress us with, that really it's hard to imagine them, right? All the amount of time that they're trying to tell us that the earth has been around, which is, again, a segue into my next lesson. I'll be talking about the age of the earth. But we see the drop-off there of improbability or possibility when it comes to intelligent, purposeful design versus random chance. When I was studying for this lesson, one of the images that someone gave that I thought was pretty good about how improbable it was you think about a Rubik's Cube, because my daughter likes to play with Rubik's Cubes, and it's hard enough for me to get two sides to match up. But the imagery that they gave that was pretty good was, imagine a blind person with a randomized cube just randomly twisting and turning it, coming out, you know, solving it. Imagine, so you take that, how improbable that is, and then they said, take 10 to the 50th power of individuals doing this, and them all coming out with the solution simultaneously. Imagine 10 to the 50th power, right? One with 50 zeros behind it, of these blind individuals doing these Rubik's Cubes and solving them simultaneously at the same time. Just how impossible would that be? And then, I mean, there's so much we could talk about tonight. I'm actually getting a little close to my time here. And I am in my conclusion right now, but just imagine the impossibility of some of the, it's too much really sometimes to imagine. But with God, all things are possible. With God, we see purpose, we see design, we see reason. I was just showing a coworker of mine at work. I like to stick my water bottles outside in the freezing cold and then bring them inside, and there's still water. And then when you shake them, you can watch them freeze from top to bottom, because of the purity of the water, there's nothing for the water or the crystals to freeze around to become crystallized or solidified. But when you shake it, it disturbs the water, and then it freezes from top to bottom. And I pointed out how every time, water is always going to freeze from top to bottom, because God designed it that way on purpose. Otherwise, life could not exist on this planet. If you think about lakes and streams and rivers and how all the aquatic life that lives in them survives the fish. They survive the winter because water freezes from top to bottom. And we'll do so every time because God designed everything. That's why we see a field of science called biomimicry, in which they take design in the natural world and they use it to make better technologies, because there's purpose, there's intelligence. And purposeful, intelligent thought always beats the possibility of something happening by random chance, especially when you're talking about increasing from disorder to order, when you're talking about making something better, when you're talking about the idea of a bunch of trees in the woods and then maybe a hurricane blows through and you see a log cabin. We know to get from disorder to order, it requires this intelligent thought process. That's my lesson that I have for you tonight, the laws of probability and the impossible theory. If there are any here tonight who need the prayers of the congregation, who realize that God is the only possible truth, if there are any here tonight who need the prayers of the congregation, whatever that need is, please let it be known as we stand to sing the song of invitation.